Hello and welcome to the Beacon Group's Noon Step Meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Andy and I am an alcoholic. In an effort to lessen distraction to others and to respect our speakers, you will not be able to unmute yourself during the meeting. Let's start the meeting with a moment of silence, followed by the serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Amen. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is the desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. This is an open meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and all are welcome to attend, but we ask that only alcoholics participate. If you are new to AA or new to the Beacon Group, we strongly recommend home group membership and sponsorship. If you are new or not so new and looking for a sponsor, please put your name and number in the chat. If you have worked all 12 steps as outlined in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, have had a spiritual experience, and a willing to sponsor, please also put your name and number in the chat. The chat will remain open during the meeting, except when the speaker is sharing. If you're looking for a home group, we would love to have you. Our business meetings on the third Thursday of the month at 6 p.m. on Zoom. To sign up for membership and to be on the email list, please visit our website, which is posted in the chat. Our website has a lot of great information as well as recordings of our meetings. Also in the chat, you will find our AA quote of the day. The quote source will always be from AA literature. Our speaker will share the 30 minutes on the step of the day, and then we will automatically split into breakout rooms for small group discussions. Each group has a moderator, which will divide the time equally and invite each person to share. Questions are encouraged during the sharing part of the meeting. When you share, please be sure your environment is quiet and free of distractions. Breakout room discussions, and at 12:53, followed by day counts, announcements, and Lord's Prayer. I have asked Larry to read the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Larry, and I'm an alcoholic. And these are the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. One, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, and that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, we came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, we made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. Four, we made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, we admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being, the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, we were entirely ready to have God remove all of these defects of character. Seven, we humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, we made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, we made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, we continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we try to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all of our affairs.
Thank you, Larry. Today we will hear a talk on step three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. And please give a warm welcome to the first of three New Jersey speakers over the next 3 days, our friend Trish S. from Cult.
I'm ready. Hey, everybody, I'm Trish. I'm an alcoholic, and I'm from New Jersey. My home group is Sunlight of the Spirit, and we are located in Colts Neck, New Jersey. We meet by Zoom and in person every Friday at 7:30. We're a speaker discussion, and we speak on our spiritual experience gained through working the 12 steps. I love my home group. My sobriety date is January 2nd, 2003. And I have an amazing, loving sponsor who texted me before that she won't be able to be here. I was kind of like, she's always with me. And I just am so grateful to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I hope that comes through in my talk. I'm a little nervous because this is almost kind of like my home group also. I've been part of this new Zoom from the early stages, thanks to Cynthia, the famous flyer sender, who told me about this meeting. And I got right into service, and it just helped me so much through the pandemic and continues to help me. I'm still doing service, and that was something I learned early on when I came in 18 years ago. I'll talk a little bit about that, and then we'll get into this amazing step that, a funny thing, when you're going to talk on step three, you're applying step three an awful lot when you're coming to speak on it, really deflating my ego, because if I allowed my ego to answer Girish when he asked me a long time ago, I would have said, no, I don't like talking on a specific step. I like talking about my story, it's easier for me, but I can thread the steps into my story and allowing my ego to come into play blocks me from the sunlight of the spirit. And I'm sure at the end of this 30 minutes, I may not remember everything I said, but if one person did and they got something out of it, I'm pretty sure that's what God intended. So as my sister said, I'm just going to speak from my heart and, just not worry about, the things that I worry about, the things that an alcoholic worries about, deflating my ego and just really trusting God. And that's what step three is, for me today. I had a couple iterations of taking step three. But in this last time we're running through it with Arisa, it was really about trusting this process, trusting when I make that decision, trusting my decision. So early on, before I came into AA, any decision that I made, I was sure it wasn't the right decision. So I always wanted to apply the George Costanza method and just do the opposite, because that would probably be the right thing. But another example for me was my sister, who is on the Zoom today, and was the example that I had of AA. If she was going to do something, I thought that because she doesn't drink and she's in AA, it had to be the right thing. So I understood something about the idea of alcohol not being in your life probably means you're going to make better decisions. But before I got here, I made a lot of bad decisions. And I grew up, my mom was an alcoholic. And when I think back about the actor, story in step three, I identify with that so much about us wanting to put people in places. A lot of my conversations with my sponsor today are because somebody didn't act the way I wanted them to act. And we got to, unpack that and figure out what my part is in that and come out the other side with a loving heart toward that person. It's such a beautiful thing that I could do that today. But back then, as early as 12, 13, and 14 in my formative years, when my mom was just a hopeless alcoholic and I needed her to be, perfect mom in this perfect town that we grew up in, I would often be saying things to her, can't you be like Mrs. Harrington? Can't you be like this person? Constantly being disappointed in what I was seeing compared to what I thought should be. So it started early for me being the child of an alcoholic, wanting to kind of arrange things in a way that I wanted them to be. Eventually, thank God, she did get help, but it was, by the time she was getting help, she was in her bed, 80 pounds, and, probably dying, as we all know that if we don't get the help that we need in this progressive disease, we're going to die, go to an institution or jail. And fortunately for us, we had somebody that was friends with my grandfather, who was the judge of our town. He might have been a public information representative from the area or the district, but he was his deputy and he was an AA. And he told my grandfather about a place called Alena Lodge, which many people have heard of, whether you're from New Jersey or not, but it's based here in New Jersey. And if you're going there, you're going there for a long time. And that's where she went. But even when the stretcher came into the house, she had to be taken there by ambulance. That's how sick she was. She still didn't want to go. And they called me in to beg my mother to go. So that was my, introduction to this disease. And it was horrible. And it was taking my beautiful mother away from us. And but she did go away and she did get well and she did come back. And we learned about AA in our household. And so at a young age, all these things I was already experiencing, I was starting to see that there was this place that my mother could go and it would restore her back to sanity and bring her back to be the mother that was even a more improved version of her. And she was getting that way by going to these meetings every night. And she had a host of friends and she'd go to the diner. And it was a beautiful thing that we got to witness. And but it was something, she explained to us that it's a family disease and we should be aware of this and just watch it. So I'd always, think about that when I was guzzling my quarts of beer in high school with all my friends and then throwing up and then going to the basketball game. No big deal. But a few years later, my sister, and I don't think she minds me telling this story, she was away at college and she called me and said that she thought she had a brain tumor and she had to come home and she can't even put one foot in front of the other. And it's just crazy. And I hung up the phone and I said, oh, she's got it. She's the one in the family that's got it. So I'm off the hook. And sure enough, she came home and she didn't have a brain tumor. Sometimes I forget to tell people that. And after speaking with doctors and such that my dad took her to see, what's wrong with his daughter, it was determined that she has a problem with alcohol and drugs. And she started going to AA with my mom and it was very cute and sweet. And she's still sober to this day. God bless her, getting sober at 19 years old. But again, I thought I'm off the hook, I'm gonna just skate around now because she's got it and I don't, and I'm very happy for her to be going to these AA meetings. And I'd go to her celebrations and they were always so happy and getting their coins and I'd see the shades behind them that they have this. And when I go to these celebrations, I would cry. I would feel something that they were saying from the podium. I'm getting patient that, I was identifying and but there was going to, I realized I needed to surrender and come into these rooms. So my life just from there was, party like a rock star, get the job in the city and the Irish background and, dad will approve and make these decisions that are so ill-motivated. So many of my decisions were not motivated purely. And, I was reading when doing my third step work with Arisa, one of the assignments was to write my own third step prayer. And I'll read it later if I remember, but part of it is really, removing to check my motives, let my motives be pure, because I know how dangerous that was for me when I was drinking and even sometimes in sobriety, that I'm not making a decision based on anything but myself. And myself was broken. So those outcomes were broken. So of course, that marriage lasted 5 years. And it was just riddled with problems. And I moved out so many times. I wouldn't just leave the room when we got in an argument. I would just move. And in 5 years, I had so many, my sister, I'm sorry to keep referencing her, but she was such a big part of my life. She figured out how to pack my car perfectly. That's how much I moved, those geographics. So if I move, it'll be better. It will change. And that eventually, that marriage ended. And my dad was a divorce lawyer. And I remember telling him, I need to get a divorce. And he didn't even want me to get divorced. He was, I think, so concerned with me, just stay with this guy. I don't care how miserable you are. You shouldn't be by yourself. But then he finally relented. And so here I was in my late 30s, divorced, no children. you know, let's get the wine and the brie and the bachelorette pad down in Seabright, New Jersey, and what could go wrong? So that was just, you know, the beginning of the end, but it took several years and, you know, more choices, more decisions, more tragedies that happened to me in this time. I lost my dad. I lost my boss in a plane crash that I booked him on the flight. You know, drink. God, it's my fault that plane crash. Just all these things were happening to me. I met somebody else who happened to be an AA. And when he said he was an AA, I was like, oh, I love you AA people. And we, you know, went into this, you know, great relationship. And I think part of the motivation was, well, my drinking's starting to get a little sketchy. And maybe because I'm with somebody in AA, that will help it. And, you know, we know how that worked out. But unfortunately for this AA, this guy, he didn't go to a lot of those meetings. Now, I had the example of my mother and my sister, and they went to meetings. And, you know, he's not doing that much. And I would be in our kitchen with a glass of wine and say, maybe I want to go to some of those meetings they go to. But it never really, you know, that inability to get honest and all those things that I learned later on about, you know, what he wasn't doing, it did eventually lead to his death. He did die of this disease. He died of alcohol withdrawal, actually. So here I am, you know, somebody that kind of curtailed my drinking through that 5-year relationship with this loss. And I don't, you know, I have no recourse but to drink. You know, you lose somebody to alcoholism, you have no coping skills, you have no we, you have yourself. And this is how I'm going to deal with it. And for the entire year after his death, before I surrendered, I drank every single day and a lot. And in that time, I, toward the end, when I was starting to negotiate with friends and people and thinking about every other way to lick this other than AA, even though I knew it, you know, I was at the point where I'm looking in the mirror and I said, you're such an alcoholic. How sad is that? But I have none of you guys. It's just me in my bathroom going out, not knowing what's going to happen. And I went out one night with my best friend and I was drunk when I got there. And she was kind of like, gosh, you're already drunk. Like, yeah, you know, pregame and all that stuff. And she was judging me. And she said something about telling my family, how much longer until I tell your family? And I proceeded to just say things to her that to this day, I make a living amends to her. I should have just knocked her off her bar stool. It would have been less painful. But then after my, you know, diatribe of you this and that, and, you know, who do you think you are? And just because you have kids, you're not an alcoholic, and you drink water between your drinks, like that's a big deal, and yada, yada. I said, well, give me a week. I needed a week. So I'm bartering, you know, before the big reveal to my family, because they didn't have a clue, right? It was only a few days after that, that she said that I went out for that last hurrah, New Year's Eve, you know, all dressed up and looking fine. And just, you know, imploding some event that I thought I belonged at. And the people that I went to party with, who I always thought were far worse than me, were telling me that I should probably leave. And I did. And I swore I'd never talk to them again. And the next morning I called my sister because I woke up with that. I think it's a miracle. I really do. Because I wasn't coming here. And I said, I need help. I need help. And, you know, the third step talks about that bondage of self. And, you know, it's such a strong statement for me because I look at it as, you know, shackles literally coming off of me, even just by making that one decision to call my sister, to say, I need help. I need this program. I need something. I can't go on anymore. And, you know, I can question, I don't know why that particular morning I woke up and realized, you know, I didn't call my brother to say happy birthday. His birthday's on New Year's Eve. It really sucks having a brother have a birthday on New Year's Eve when you're an alcoholic because you're never sober enough to call them. So once again, I didn't call him. And it was that little thing, that little, you know, broken shoelace thing that made me say, I need help. And I did call. And then the rest was just like walking through it, because I think I was so ready. It was just, you know, I was 43 and it was time. It was God's time for me that I was able to open my mind and say, come on in, we're going to do this. And I called a place, and there was no room at the inn. It was the holidays. And I didn't really, you know, I wasn't going to be like, all right, then it was just one bad night. Let's forget about this. I had already told my sister, and I was locked and loaded. You know, I wasn't going to say it was just, you know, I had a bad headache, and, you know, things went awry. It was bad. So that place called me back and said, you know, I called around some places for you, and there's a bed at this place up in Sussex County, New Jersey. And I don't know that anyone has experience with calling rehabs, but they don't normally say we're full, but let me call some places for you. I don't think that's how they are today. It's a lot different. But I had an angel that made that call for me and found me a place. And it was really good for me to remove myself from my environment and go to this rehab for 3 weeks and just start that humbling experience. My roommate was a heroin addict. I was like, what the heck? You know, I worked in the city for the head of a television network, and I wore a suit and had a really nice pocketbook, and how did I get here? And it was just, you know, we're all the same right now. And that's what I learned in rehab. It doesn't matter. Don't judge other people, and just, you know, take the suggestions. Don't drink your coffee on the carpet. And I was just such a geek, a rule following geek, that all this stuff was teaching me about life on life's terms. And it was really helpful. And then I came into AA. Of course, when you come into AA, you start, you know, with your list of things you need to do. And that's what they taught me to do in rehab. Just, you know, we got some things covered, some basics covered. I think I paged through the big book in rehab, but it was really kind of scary. And I do see why it's so important to read the big book with somebody else and have somebody decode it for you, because it's a beautiful economy of language that Bill has, but it's nice to have it interpreted. So I found a sponsor when I came out. She found me, such an amazing woman, and she was my sponsor for the first 8 years. And she was a 12 and 12 sponsor. We later, while we were together, did the steps again through the big book. But my experience was initially with the 12 and 12. And she, you know, was really adamant about 1, 2, and 3. And this was my experience, you know, back then. And it wasn't that I didn't know about the big book. It wasn't that I felt I was getting, you know, shortchanged. She was this beautiful woman. She seemed like, you know, sent down from heaven at the meeting that I raised my hand at, as I always suggest people do when they're new. And here it's a little different on Zoom, but, you know, let us know you're here, because by doing that, she turned to me. And it was an afternoon meeting, and the sun was coming in, and she just looked like she had a halo. And she's kind of cool and bohemian and had these gypsy kind of clothes on. And so when I raised my hand that I was new, she turned to me and said, do you have a sponsor? And I said, no. And she's like, okay, I'll be your sponsor. And I checked it off my list. And, you know, we began this journey together, and she talked at length about, you know, really getting step 1, 2, and 3 down before we launched into the inventory, and she explained it to me about this inventory. You know, we're going to look at some things. We're going to look at some baggage and luggage, and we really want you to be able to invite God into this in a very natural and organic way. And that was a little bit not natural and organic for me. So, because I, you know, I got my life is together, as you can see, you know, I just got out of rehab, and, you know, lots of things happened before I got there. But I, you know, externally felt like I'm going to be a little different than the people you've had, but let's see where we go. And she gave me these two keys. It was a gift for, I think, my 90 days, which I presented to the person at the podium, a list of all the meetings I went to, because I'm a rule follower. And I even had little smile faces or frown faces, like they weren't nice to me there. They were nice to me there. This is me early on in sobriety. And I love all my friends that are still with me, you know, 18 years later, because I was just such a stickler. And they said, oh, we believe you. You don't have to show us the list. Of course, they believe me. And so, you know, my sponsor and I, she gave me two keys. And first, I'm going to read this short little paragraph that opens up in the 12 and 12, step three. And it's really, if you really read these words, especially if you're, I don't know, just anytime I open up this book and read, it's so beautiful, but I'll see it through, you know, a new set of glasses, if you will. So practicing step three is like opening of a door, which to all appearances is still closed and locked. All we need is a key and the decision to swing the door open. There is only one key, and it is called willingness. Once unlocked by willingness, the door opens almost of itself. And looking through it, we shall see a pathway beside which is an inscription. It reads, "This is the way to a faith that works." In the first two steps, we are engaged in reflection. We saw that we were powerless over alcohol, but we also perceived that fate of some kind, if only in AA itself, is possible to anyone. These conclusions did not require action. They required only acceptance. And the two keys she gave me said willingness and acceptance. And what, you know, what an amazing gift to give me so early on in AA, that willingness and acceptance. It was going to become so important in everything I did. And she would remind me always, willingness, acceptance. I would sit at meetings and poker like this, right next to her. If somebody came in that was bothering me, they weren't fitting the mold. And she would just say, patience and tolerance, acceptance, acceptance. And it helped me rest. All the times that I'm doing that, I'm blocking out that sunlight that AA wants to fill my head with. And I would just fight it. I love, you know, in step 10, when we can cease fighting, I wish that was a little earlier because I wanted to fight my way all the way up to step 10. Just constantly, you know, wanting to put people in where they belong and fit my mold, please. And if you don't, you know, it's just going to not be pretty. And let's, you know, figure out how we can make that happen. It's just a life run on self-will, self, you know, it's just that propulsion. That word is so strong and so perfect for me because I would just want to insert my way into everything. Coming into and doing step three, when I did it early on, you know, go to a quiet place, reflect on God and all that stuff. And well, okay, I'm still in my, you know, grandeur of sobriety, loving it, loving AA, always have, never have not loved AA. But I wanted to really make a statement and really get this step three thing down because it was so important because I was going to launch into this inventory and I had a lot of stuff. My stuff is so bad. It's so much worse than everybody else's. So I jumped out of a plane. That's letting go and letting God. I didn't go to the quiet. Some people go to the beach or they'll go here. I said, I'm going to jump out of a plane because that will really be letting go. And, you know, it's an extreme thing and it's almost, you know, comical, but, you know, for some people, that whole concept of, okay, you're going to tell me to turn myself over to God, my whole life, my will and everything. You know, we read in this meeting, the 12 steps, but up to a little while ago, we used to read, you know, how it works. And everybody hears that at the beginning of the meeting. And right after how it works, it says, being convinced. Like, I'm not convinced. Who's convinced? But all right, let's be convinced. We were at step three, which is that we decided to turn our will and our life over to God as we understood him. And then it just goes on to tell you, you know, what does that mean? Because it sounds like an awful lot. Like I reflected, you know, I accepted that I'm powerless. I'm so glad that step one became very apparent to me before I even came into these rooms, but I still did an exercise where I was able to really put it in writing about how out of control and how much my life was unmanageable, because I needed to do that because I looked at, hey, I got a really cool apartment, which I called the penthouse, and it wasn't the penthouse at all. It's clean, no alcoholic lives here. I get on a train every day and go to the city. Like I said, you know, all dressed up. But, you know, they had asked me to leave that job. So so much for that. I don't have all those things. I've lost everything. And I do need to do this step. And I do need to humble myself. I do need to put myself to really just trust, because I'm going to have to do this throughout my day, you know, even at 18 years. I'm going to have to ask God to please enter, because I'm about to insert myself here and, you know, insert self here. I have to just skip that. Don't do that. Insert God here. I needed to do that, you know, to come here today, because it's much better. It's so much better than I used to be. In so many ways, in wanting to, you know, have these conversations about this person not acting the way they should, doesn't happen so much anymore. I'm so free of that because of this step, because of this pivotal step, and because of these things that, you know, just the other day, something kind of bent my nose out of shame, which I'm sensitive, so that can happen. But I take it in stride. It doesn't shut me down. It certainly doesn't send me out to drink. It sends me to service. It sends me to my laptop. Dear Arisa, just getting it out, I see it, and then I can look at the other side of it, like, look at you. And, you know, but I invited God in, and I feel pretty good about it. So it didn't require a phone call. This is how I'm working through inserting myself, because it just a life run by me, as great as I think I am and capable. I'm very capable in certain skill sets, and I can apply myself there. But when it comes to personal relationships and interactions and AA and how I'm going to be of service inside and outside of these rooms, I must squash my ego. I must trust when this step says it needs me to make a decision to turn my will and my life over, to say, yeah, turn it over. Kind of like, don't just sit back and go, okay, I will do that. I will do that. And I will be free. I will be free. I mean, what does it say? It's just so take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help, of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always. And I'll just close real quick with my third step prayer that I want to share with you, because it helps me every day. This is my prayer that I read. Spirit of the realm, you save me from myself. Please continue to keep me open, honest, and loving in all I do and all I say. Help me to pause, be silent. If I need to pause, let me be strong and confident when I speak without tone, and remind me to check my motives, and help me be pure in my actions so I may be of maximum service to those you put on my path. Thank you for being on my path today, everybody. That's it.
Heartfelt.